This is NBC Nightly News, Wednesday, September 29th, reported by John Chancellor.
Good evening. On a day when the war is heating up a bit, when Hurricane Ginger has decided to come inland and hit the mid-Atlantic beaches, when the figures on the rate of increase of crime came out, showing that it's still going up, but not everywhere. When the president had the Soviet foreign minister in for a chat, and with the Chinese were, if anything, more inscrutable than ever. But the top story of the day is the war. In Vietnam, along the South Vietnamese-Cambodian border, one of the biggest confrontations in a long time began building up today. There are 2 to 3 North Vietnamese divisions in the area, perhaps 15,000 men. The South Vietnamese have 25,000, including reinforcements rushed in from the Saigon area. There are about 1,500 Americans involved. The presence of the Americans is unusual, but they were sent in when it looked as though the North Vietnamese might break loose. The enemy drive was stalled by a lot of American air power, but the enemy divisions are still in that area. There were more demonstrations and protests today against the solo candidacy of President Tu. On his part, he ordered the police to shoot on sight and shoot to kill any demonstrator caught in a violent act. The election is Sunday.
The voters in South Vietnam have seen a lot of President Nguyen Van Thieu lately, but only on television. Earlier this month, when Thieu began his campaign without opposition, he planned to stump the countryside personally and meet the voters face to face. Apparently, that idea has been abandoned. Security officials have expressed fear that an attempt might be made on the president's life. Despite all the police and security forces in Saigon, dissident groups have managed to take their protests into the streets. Students, militant Buddhists, and veterans, although poorly organized, have increased the tempo of dissent. The demonstrations have been small but numerous, with violence and anger directed at the one-man election, the government, and the Americans, who the demonstrators believe are partly responsible for the one-man race. In Da Nang, the protest took on an especially violent tone. About 60 students and Buddhist monks occupied the Tin Hoi Pagoda. They carried banners protesting next Sunday's election. Police then ripped down the banners and broke up the crowd. It was the second straight day of violent protest in Da Nang, with the police using bullets and tear gas to end it. By any standard, next Sunday's election will be a strange one. The only candidate for office is afraid to campaign in public and remains in the Independence Palace. In the streets, meanwhile, demonstrators march, even though they know the election will be held as scheduled, and the outcome of the voting is already assured. Arthur Lord, NBC News, Saigon.
Just 1 week ago, the Chinese communists puzzled the world by announcing that their annual National Day Parade would be canceled this year and replaced, the way their big May Day Parade has been replaced, by less expensive celebrations. Today, the Chinese puzzled the world again by saying that the big annual diplomatic banquet, which precedes the parade, has been canceled too. The Chinese had promised some possible explanation of what's been going on there. They said that would come today on television, but that was postponed too. So the only thing we know, or think we know, is that it may be impossible to see anywhere in Peking who is standing next to Mao Zedong when National Day does come on Friday, which means that if there has been a change in the Chinese leadership, foreigners won't be able to see the new lineup.
This is NBC Nightly News, brought to you by Alpo Dog Food. Alpo means more meat and provides a 100% complete and balanced diet for your dog.
Karen, this isn't Alpo.
Well, it's just like Alpo, only it costs less.
Check the ingredients.
Meat byproducts, soybean meal, cracked barley. That's cereal.
Now look at Alpo.
Alpo is beef chunks and meat byproducts with all the vitamins and minerals needed for a complete and balanced diet.
And not a speck of cereal.
Sorry, Mom.
Don't tell me. Tell him.
Buttons, I promise you'll always get Alpo.
Doesn't your dog deserve Alpo?
The National League of Families of Prisoners and Missing in Southeast Asia today adopted resolutions which say that individual members cannot represent their own political views as those of the League. They did that after some League members picketed the White House yesterday, demanding that President Nixon do more about the POWs. He may have been looking out the window because last night the president made an unexpected visit to a dinner the League gave for its members. Here's a report.
750 parents, wives, and children of prisoners of war and those missing in action had spent 2 days voicing frustrations over what should be done to get them in home. Then President Nixon made his unscheduled but obviously effective visit.
I can assure you that every negotiating channel, and now I say something here that I'm sure all of you will understand, including many private channels that have not yet been disclosed, have been pursued, are being pursued, and will be pursued. We believe that it is essential to check every possible lead. We don't care where it comes from. We are doing that. I have personally ordered that, and we will continue to do so. And I believe that we will eventually succeed in our goal. That is my commitment that I make to all of you.
At a news conference today, a spokeswoman for all the families stressed the unity of their desire for action, but sidestepped the political implications of any specific policy.
We trust, as was told to us last night, that the president is pursuing every avenue. You can be sure that the families are doing likewise. No matter what our divergent political views are, and they are many, we each have a loved one there, and we will work and do everything in our power to bring those men home.
President Nixon had a talk today at the White House with the Soviet Foreign Minister, Andrei Gromyko. They talked about disarmament, among other things. It isn't known if they talked about the British government's expulsion of 105 Russian spies, but it's not likely that they did. The Soviet party paper Pravda was talking about spies today, but talking about British spies, which Pravda says come in the guise of businessmen, tourists, journalists, and scientists. The Pravda article could be the prelude to the expulsion of some British subjects from Moscow. And while the Russian presence in Britain has been reduced by about one-fifth, there are still over 400 official Russians in London, and people are wondering how many of them may be spies.
The Soviet Trade Mission headquarters in London is a key location in the furor over Russian spying in Britain. English counterintelligence officers believe that the carefully walled, tree-shrouded mission complex is a center for much of the big espionage operation which they say the Soviets have been carrying out in Britain. More than 300 Russians work at the trade headquarters, and some live on its grounds. These days, the Russians on guard at the mission gate spend much of their time not answering reporters' questions and handing out copies of a Soviet embassy statement denying the British espionage charges. Many of the suspect Russians live outside the compound in streets near the trade headquarters. The area has become known as Little Moscow. These days, many of the Russians prefer not to know English.
You're one of the Russian people here, aren't you?
No, speaking.
The Russians aren't just in London. Some are working outside the capital at the United Machinery Organization, or UMO. Here, Russians work alongside British employees. The job is leasing and selling Soviet civil engineering and road building equipment. UMO has been given an intensive going over by British spy hunters. Other Soviet enterprises and possible spy covers include a bank, an optical outfit, and a lumber agency. Russians employed by UMO live in their own apartment house nearby. Now it has been noticed that the Russians just happen to be dwelling next door to a sensitive British agency called CERL, the Services Electronics Research Laboratory. Aeroflot, the Soviet airline, also has been named as part of the Russian espionage setup. It is Aeroflot that will carry home the expelled Russians said to be working for the KGB, the Kremlin's secret service. While most of the 550 Russian diplomats and officials in Britain have been saying next to nothing about the spying charges, one Soviet diplomat at the London embassy talked a little, and jauntily.
Well, personally, I think it's ridiculous.
But the action of the British government?
Yes.
On what grounds do you consider it ridiculous?
I think because they're actually managed to paralyze to a large extent the work of day-to-day contacts between Britain and the Soviet Union.
I see. You're the second secretary. I wonder if I could get your name.
Yes. No name. I've got
no
KGB
name.
Number.
Nobody knows how many KGB numbers will be left in Britain after the ousted Russians depart. George Montgomery, NBC News, London.
Another visitor at the White House today was the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, Pierre-Paul Schweitzer. President Nixon told Schweitzer he was encouraged by the recent actions to reform the world money system and get the United States balance of payments out of the red. The president of the West German Central Bank was in Washington today, and he said that it's his impression the United States will devalue the dollar in terms of gold. And all the countries of Latin America, plus the English-speaking Caribbean countries, today urged the United States to drop the 10% surcharge on foreign goods entering the United States. One of the products affected by the 10% surcharge is foreign cars. When the surcharge went on, some people said the foreigners' share of the American car market would drop below the 16% share it had before the surcharge. Well, it hasn't. The Wall Street Journal says the foreign share of the car market has risen to 22%, probably because dealers are selling out big inventories at the old, cheaper prices.
Cranberry juice cocktail?
Cranberry juice cocktail? For breakfast?
Sheila Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Cocktail is the yummy way to get vitamin C every day.
I like cranberry juice cocktail mixed with orange juice. I like mine straight.
Harry, what do you think?
Sparkly.
Everybody's drinking it at breakfast.
Real sparkly. Mm-hmm.
Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Cocktail, the other breakfast drink. Regular and low calorie.
Teacher Karen Jackson has weathered the most devastating attacks in her business. But there's one attack even Karen's no match for. A cough attack. A cough attack from a cold. So Karen takes Vicks Formula 44. Formula 44 helps quiet a cough attack with a cough suppressant as effective as codeine, but not narcotic. Shortly, Karen Jackson is her calm, quiet self again. Formula 44. When your next cough attack attacks...
At the Attica State Prison today, pardon me, about 150 visitors were allowed in to see the prisoners, the first visitors since the rebellion began at Attica earlier this month. And in Massachusetts, several prisons are being affected by a different prisoner technique. The prisoners are refusing to do their prison jobs other than keeping the hospitals, power plants, and kitchens going. One of these places is the state prison at Walpole, Massachusetts. There, authorities have made substantial changes in the censorship of prisoner mail. But at Walpole today, the prisoners had more to say.
Massachusetts long-term convicts. The inmates this week have refused to do any work. They are demanding action on several grievances. Mainly, they want an easing of the Massachusetts parole law, which is more rigid than most. And they want rehabilitation programs, too. Today, newsmen were invited in to hear their complaints.
Here in Walpole, we have a plate shop, a foundry, and a brush shop. These shops teach men nothing constructive. They are meeting places for inmates to talk over old crimes and invent new ones. Not that they want to, but only because they have nothing else here to do.
We have a counseling service of psychologists and whatnot that hide in the closet out front. We don't need them out front. We need them in here. We have a transfer board that doesn't have the power to transfer people. We have a classification board. I've been here 9 years and never seen them. We have a school that has two classes and 600 men. doesn't have the funds. There are men in here that can't read or write.
Go halfway with us. We're not asking for everything, ice cream and cake. Just go halfway with us. Start treating us like human beings instead of, I quote, Mr. Droney, animals in cages. He says that's what we are. But we're not animals. We're all human beings. And we want to be treated like human beings. We know that the real beef isn't specifically the parole eligibility laws, the injustice of the present parole eligibility laws. The real beef are people's attitudes toward us.
As if Attica were there and Walpole were here, and there are essential differences between Attica and Walpole. The physical plant is different. It's newer and it's cleaner, right? But the attitude of the administration and of your penal system in this state that supports the administration and their attitude is not different than Attica. We identify with the prisoners of Attica.
We are effectively being used against each other. There's absolutely no morale in this prison. There's no unity in here. There's no hope in here.
I never see the board. Now, I'm not asking to go out in 15 years. I'm just asking to see the parole board in 15 years. I have 2 years in now. Now, if I stay here for the rest of my life, what am I going to learn? I ask people for help and they don't help me. There's nothing here for me or Joe Rachel or anybody my age. Now, I'm trying to speak for people my age now. There's nothing here whatsoever for them. Now, all I'm going to learn is what the older guys already know. Now, I don't want to learn that. Thank you.
Congressman Richard H. Puff of Virginia, a conservative Republican, is one of the men President Nixon has always considered for the Supreme Court. And as we now learn, they are checking him out.
The Nixon administration has begun the nominating process to put Richard Puff on the Supreme Court. Deputy Attorney General Richard Kleindienst sent a letter yesterday to the American Bar Association Screening Committee asking that a probe of Puff, already begun to examine his fitness for the Court of Appeals, be upgraded. Most of the letter argues that Puff's experience as a major contributor of anti-crime legislation on the House Judiciary Committee is equivalent to long years on the bench and in practice. The conservative Virginia congressman has only 5 years legal experience. Sources indicate President Nixon wanted to name Puff to the court as far back as 1969. The major problem is selecting a second nominee. Justice Harlan's retirement came as a surprise. A list of more than 100 names has been narrowed to 5 or 6. Supposedly, no women are on the final list. Those working on the second nomination have been told to look for a conservative and probably someone not from the South to balance off the Puff nomination. For example, one of the 6 is believed to be Federal Judge Edward Janu of Maine. The administration has floated Puff's name early to give the opposition a chance to be heard from. It wants to hear what the opposition has before it formally announces the selection. Carl Stern, NBC News, Washington.
The FBI crime figures came out today for the first 6 months of 1971. They show an 11% increase in violent crime, a rate which is getting worse, and a 7% increase in all serious crime, a more hopeful rate. Crime is increasing all over, but the highest rates of increase are in the Northeast and in the West. And in New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, Houston, and Los Angeles, crime rates are up. But in 19 other big cities, the serious crime rate is down a bit. And in Washington, D.C., where the crime rate went up 16% in the first half of 1970, it went down 16% this year.
This year, American Motors can make this promise. If anything goes wrong with one of our 72s, we'll fix it free. One reason we can do this is more people are making more checks than ever before to be sure our cars are right when they leave the factory.
At the dealers, we're doing something most dealers don't. Road testing and double checking every single car we get. Then I sign this form. Before I put my name on it, everything's got to be just right.
A lot of car dealers don't like to talk about what happens after you buy the car. Well, I do. Here's our guarantee.
When you buy a new 72 from us, American Motors guarantees that except for tires, we'll pay for the parts and the labor to fix anything that goes wrong that's our fault. Anything. We'll do this for 12 months or 12,000 miles at no cost to you. All you have to do is take reasonable care of the car, use it under normal conditions, and get it fixed by one of us dealers. And that's it.
Usually, if you have to leave your car overnight for warranty repairs, you walk or you're inconvenienced. Well, not here or at most other dealers. We'll loan you a nice, clean car, free.
For years, people have passed the buck about car service problems. But when you buy a 72 from us, you get a name and toll-free number in Detroit to call if you have a problem. And I promise you'll get action, not a runaround.
American Motors Buyer Protection Plan. Nobody in the business does as much for you after you buy a car.
Congressman Ogden Reed of New York, who used to be president of the late lamented New York Herald Tribune, said today that the press is under the most serious attack in our history. Reed wants legislation passed which would prohibit a court from preventing the publication of news, which is prior restraint. This spring, the publication of the Pentagon Papers was held up for 15 days by court proceedings. Reed was a witness before Senator Sam Ervin's investigation of freedom of the press. Here's a report on another witness.
Today's principal witness was Frank Stanton, president of CBS. He said the government is threatening freedom of the press by the use of subpoenas to compel reporters to reveal their sources and networks to give up their film. And he said the Federal Communications Commission is jeopardizing broadcast news by trying to regulate its content and its methods. He called for new laws to prevent abuses, suggesting all of this is creating a dark shadow of governmental surveillance that inhibits the people's right to know.
We all make mistakes, and we make our share of them, and we're not allergic to criticism. But when a man in the position of the vice president makes the attack that he did on the broadcast media, and when you recognize that the FCC is the controller of our licenses, and it's human nature to believe that men serving on that commission would look to the second highest office in the land, if you will, to get a clue as to perhaps how they should conduct themselves, I have seen increasing involvement on the part of the bureaucracy of the FCC into things that I think we're protected from under the First Amendment. It's my belief that our overregulation in any field is undesirable, but overregulation in the field of ideas, I think, is dangerous to the future of the republic.
A year ago in Gary, Indiana, the school board decided to make an educational experiment. It chose an all-black school in which the performance of the pupils had not been very good, and it turned over the education of these pupils to a private company. Gary was the first city in the country to do anything like that, and now there are some results to report.
Students at Banneker School in Gary, Indiana, had been performing poorly in scholastic tests for years. Three out of every four students at the school were well below the national average in mathematics and reading skills. So, last year, Gary school officials decided to try something different. They hired a private company to run the school for them. The company, based in California, set up a new educational program that emphasized individual instruction and allowed students to proceed at their own pace. It even offered to refund to the Gary school system the $800 a year tuition of every child who failed to come up to national standards. The experiment was highly controversial and was denounced by educational traditionalists. But the program appears to be working. The latest tests show that three out of every four students who participated in the program last year are now performing at a rate equal to or better than the national average. There were some students who did not achieve scores equal to the national average, but under the money-back guarantee agreement, Gary schools will not have to pay for the education of those children. There are 2 years left in the Banneker school experiment, but the initial results are so good that there is already talk about expanding the idea to other Gary schools. Keith Klein, NBC News, Gary.
Don't you love your grandchildren?
Of course I do. I just don't feel up to having them for the entire weekend.
Is it a regularity?
Mm-hmm. But I'm not taking any harsh laxatives.
Then take Phillips Milk of Magnesia. It's gentle.
Doctors recommend Milk of Magnesia more often than anything else. When you need a laxative, get Phillips Milk of Magnesia, the kind doctors recommend most often.
Inside a Westinghouse washer lives another little washer. It's called the Hand Wash Agitator. It gently washes all the delicate things you'd ordinarily do by hand. It hides under the regular heavy-duty agitator, which handles the big 18-pound wash loads. So between the hand wash agitator and the heavy-duty agitator, it's like having two washers in one. You can be sure if it's Westinghouse.
Hurricane Ginger, that three-week-old storm, stopped fooling around in the Atlantic yesterday and headed for North Carolina, where it is expected to come explosively ashore tomorrow morning. An orbiting solar laboratory, a Sunwatcher spacecraft, was launched today from Space Cape Kennedy, and it went into the wrong orbit. The ground controllers say they got it back on a decent track, thereby saving a $36 million mission. The government today delayed for 2 years safety regulations for new cars, which require that a person must be able to survive a front-end crash at 30 miles an hour. That won't be required now until the 1976 models are out. But the government also ordered that the 1974 models must have seat belts, which have to be fastened or the car won't start. Trading was very light today on the New York Stock Exchange, and there was little movement in price. The Dow Jones Industrials lost half a point. On the New York Exchange, an average share gained a penny. On the American Exchange, an average share went up 2 cents. Finally, Mrs. Jolene Guerin of San Pedro, California, was living in a $75 a month apartment with her husband and four children when she became the heir to a $200,000 inheritance. Mrs. Guerin, when she got the money, really began to spend it. She and her family traveled everywhere, bought a $2,000 hi-fi, cars, motorcycles, and a truck, ski equipment, appliances, clothes, and the whole family, she says cheerfully, began going to see a psychiatrist. Well, they blew the whole wad, and the Guerin family is now poorer and possibly wiser. Mrs. Guerin says the smart thing to have done would have been to invest the money. And would she herself follow that advice? No, she says, I'd do exactly the same thing I did before. I'd blow it all. Good night for NBC News.